I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair,
hey there, this is Vic Cohen on Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question, and it's always a fair question here, and boy, do I have a lot of questions for our guest tonight. This guy, he's a friend, and he's from Chicago. It's amazing he's alive, actually.
We're acquaintances.
Oh, okay, thanks. I'm happy you cleared that up right away. Well, his name is Jeff Levine. He's a criminal defense attorney. He lives in the city of Chicago, one of the most dangerous cities, not in the United States, in the world.
It's not a dangerous city. It's a lovely city.
Well, it might be lovely where you rich people live, but where everyone's being shot doesn't sound so lovely.
I'm not that rich, Vic.
Well, criminal defense.
But thank you for thinking that. And well, I did pick up dinner tonight.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
But I'm still going to be just as tough on you as far as, you know, the questioning goes, you know, because it's important. I'm confused by what's going on in Chicago. And
well, you're confused generally.
I am.
But yes.
But we're going to focus on Chicago for tonight.
I'm here to help.
Thank you. Now, as a criminal defense attorney, do you, I would imagine that you work a lot with the police as far as you are defending criminals.
Well, I work against the police, but yes, I work. The police are in my sphere of people I work with.
And what kind of crimes are your clients allegedly committing?
Well, they're largely drug offenses, federal crimes, traffic issues, DUIs.
Okay.
General criminal stuff, whatever's charged federally.
Okay. So it's mostly federal crimes.
Well, I do a lot of federal. I do some state.
Do you get involved in shooting charges, attempted murder, that kind of thing?
I usually shy away from the violent crimes that are in state classes. Those are high level state crimes. I don't usually do those. But I am involved in federal crimes such as guns, numerous gun conspiracies, things like that.
Okay. Now I'm going to run some numbers by you, and I want you to explain to me what is going on in your city. Okay, I'm going to say your city because I moved from Chicago and I never really lived in the actual city. I moved in 91. So it's been 25 years.
You were in Evanston.
Glenview.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That's
between January 1st of 2015 and October 6th, someone has been shot every 2.84 hours. Does that surprise you?
Again, it's statistics and, you know, there's a lot of people in Chicago.
It doesn't.
There's a lot of people in a lot of cities, and a lot of people get shot a lot all over the United States.
Right.
In your major cities, people get shot quite often where there's poor people generally.
Well, okay, we're going to get to that in a minute. I want to give you another statistic. This one just blew me away. Okay. When looking at neighborhood murder rates in 2014, and comparing those murder rates in certain neighborhoods to actual foreign countries, okay? West Garfield Park, is that kind of on the south side?
No, that's straight west. My studio's out there.
You have an art studio, mm-hmm. You're an artist. Okay. Mm-hmm. I hope you've got bulletproof windows. But West Garfield Park has a population of 18,000 people, and they have 116.7 murders per capita.
It's a bad neighborhood.
116.7.
Again.
The entire country of Honduras, 90.4.
Different country.
Okay, but what's going on in Chicago?
What's going on in Chicago is what's going on in all areas, the United States, and very generally poor neighborhoods, generally poor minority neighborhoods. There's no jobs. There's no opportunity. Drugs and weapons are available to anyone with a couple hundred bucks as they are to anyone in the country.
But poverty is common across the United States. It's not that Chicago owns that. What is going on specifically in Chicago to create such high crime, and particularly gun violence?
You have a breakdown of society is what you have. You have a complete breakdown of society in these areas. There's no the individuals who have interest in working, who have interest in hustling and making money. They find the only job they can get is on the street that's selling drugs. They get caught. They get sent to prison forever. There's no one raising children. You have a lot of drug addicts, a lot of drugs being sold, a lot of drugs being taken.
So would you say that these particular neighborhoods are just more rife with hopelessness and than other parts of the country? It just so happens they're all
I think if there was opportunity there, that the residents would choose the opportunity, but there's no opportunity there. I mean, once, say you get your first felony conviction, who's going to hire you? You come out, even if you get caught selling some drugs on the street as a kid, you get a felony conviction. No one's going to hire you. You can't get a job at a fast food place that pays minimum wage that you can't afford to live at.
Right.
When you have children, two or three at this point. I mean, it's
But what is it about cycle. Chicago, though? You know, I mean, because what you're describing.
I think you're trying to specify that Chicago is different than other large metropolitan areas in the United States. We have similar, exactly the same problem.
Well, they've just been crowned, you know, the most gun violent city in the country. So that's why I'm specifically, you know, focusing on it.
A lot of different areas have a lot of gun violence, like Philadelphia. I mean, there's a lot of ridiculous gun violence, which is worse than many countries every weekend. I mean, it makes the news when a large amount of suburban kids are shot or school children are shot. But if you look at the numbers are that these kids are being shot, minority kids are being shot, you know, by each other, by the police, by who's ever on the street, in the same numbers every weekend, every week.
So,
and you're trying to, I think what you're trying to do, you're trying to say Chicago's worse than anyone else. I just, you know, just because we're ahead this week doesn't mean we're any better or worse than any other cities.
Don't you? It sounds like you might be minimizing, or are you suggesting that I'm perhaps?
I think you're targeting in on a specific, you say, well, Chicago's the worst, it's the worst this week. But
it's not this week. I mean, it's
bad all over the country. I mean, if you look at the numbers all over the country, I'm sure, and I don't have statistics in front of me, but I'm sure these numbers would be corresponding across the country.
See, I think.
Do you have crime here in LA? I was just in some bad neighborhoods today.
Yeah, there's crime everywhere, like you said.
Shootings here?
Yes, but we...
There's no police on the street here.
That's well, I do see some police. Well, they're not stupid.
That's different than Chicago. Everyone here.
Well, you have to admit, I mean, there's something going on in Chicago that would make these numbers higher, right?
I actually have involvement in shooting. I mean, from the top of the government down, Justice Department... From the president, Chicagoan, doesn't like his city being, the city he's come from, being shot up all the time. And he gives pressure on the mayor, which he also knows for many years. And he's a very, you know, in certain respects, he's very competent in what the mayor does.
Rahm Emanuel.
Yes. He's a very competent mayor. He's a very competent executive. He was chief of staff of the White House. None of these people want it, and they put pressure on the people below them, which is the prosecutors in Chicago and the police in Chicago and all the agents in Chicago to stop it. And what you have is you have shootings now that have evolved from drug territory crimes, because we would arrest the people with drug territory and people would come in and fight for the new territory. And that was a large part of the wars, because we kept arresting people and stopping the demand for drugs.
Right.
So when you stop the demand, when you stop the supply, you create more demand and people fight for the territory. And that was a lot of shootings. Now people are shooting each other all over the city because they don't like each other. And because they go on YouTube and show pictures of them jumping around their neighborhood and challenging them. It's a sport now. It's what people do on the weekend when it's hot.
Killing each other?
Yes. They're kids. They have no supervision. They go out. They buy. They have drug money. They go out. They buy guns. They shoot each other.
Do you think this is?
It's horrible.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. What you're describing sounds disgusting, and I never have heard it described as a sport.
Why else would they be shooting each other if they're not doing it for money?
Make sure you talk right in the mic.
Sorry. If they're not doing it for money, if they're not doing it for territory, if they're not doing it to advance a financial situation, what else would it be?
So do you believe that this is foreshadowing for all the major cities in this country, that what's happening in Chicago could be something we're going to see more of?
Happening everywhere right now. It has been for 20 years. I think this kind of shooting, this kind of, you see incidents in Texas where everyone starts shooting. You see, you know, there's just a lot of people.
Why is Chicago, though, always in the news of late? And I know we're going to get to a shooting, but...
Chicago's in the news because it seems to make better numbers. And we're a very, we're a sports oriented society who's winning the game.
You actually, so you're telling me that you think that news outlets like Fox or CNN or all the large ones are.
It's an easy tag. Chicago's most dangerous. But I mean, I've lived in Chicago for many, many years and I've always found it to be completely safe everywhere I go.
But you don't walk around these neighborhoods, you know, where they're shooting each other.
Well, the police don't walk around those neighborhoods. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
That really, the police don't go there. I mean, it's they're just dangerous neighborhoods and you know.
See, here's my solution, part of the solution. Here's what frustrates me is that the reason I believe so many people are getting murdered in these particular neighborhoods is, as you had said, you know, there's a lot of hopelessness. There's not a lot of education. And people don't, it's coming from that place. But once this violence were to start hitting the North Side, you know, like Wrigleyville, the Gold Coast, the nice part of Michigan Avenue, I think this thing would be taken care of very quickly. Well, and I think it is racial, and that I think that a lot of the white leaders are like, hey, you know, it's not in my neighborhood. Well, and once it is in their neighborhood, it suddenly becomes a problem.
One, I can't believe you would think that the officials, I mean, they lose billions of dollars a year on hotel bookings internationally because people think, because it keeps making the news. And the most thing, and when you book a hotel, you know, and go to those restaurants, they get their 18% or 40% tax, whatever they're getting for tourists this week. They would kill, literally, to stop these shootings. That's the most important thing. It's the thing they've been trying to do for years. And I think the opinion that if they're going on, their officials are ignoring them is completely wrong and completely baseless.
I think that if it touched them more personally in their own lives, they might understand
Rahm's,
the problem.
Rahm's son was robbed, you know, on the street. So, I mean, it does. And you talk about these nice neighborhoods. You go up to Kenilworth, you go up to Lake Forest, you go up.
Those are suburbs.
You go up north side. A lot of people own guns up there and, you know, they're stable neighborhoods. And no one's shooting each other.
I'm not blaming. I haven't said anything about guns being.
I think that's where we're going with this.
Well, I don't know if it's about guns. I think it's more about hopelessness. You know, the guns are just guns. It's what people are doing with them.
You stopped mental health, you know, funding for mental health, and you stopped funding for like taking care of kids when the mothers are working, and you've attacked the lower middle class with, you know, taking their cars away when they're arrested for a minor violation, and you've ticketed them. I mean, at some point, the hope is gone. You can't compete.
So if Jeff Levine were to be mayor of Chicago, what would you be doing to help this? What would be your solutions?
How would I approach this?
Yeah.
One, I would have officers, dedicated officers walking the blocks in those neighborhoods. Dedicated officers who the populace knew and could talk to and was walking the neighborhoods, not riding around in a car at 80. Walk in the neighborhoods for each specific and target those specific neighborhoods.
They're not doing that. When you say there are no police there, you literally mean there are no police there.
Well, police will drive through at 40 or respond to a call, but
I've heard ambulances won't even go in.
I couldn't get a pizza delivered by my studio. They wouldn't come. I had to walk outside to get it. Hmm. So it's always been a rough neighborhood. My dad had a store there for years.
So you're suggesting you're one of your first things as mayor would be to have foot patrol.
I would have dedicated officers that were in the area for each specific block in those neighborhoods, especially like you said, West Garfield Park, where there's, you know, the highest shootings. I would take control back, you know, and I would also, the second thing I would do, I would stop arresting minorities, you know, youngsters for small marijuana offenses and drug offenses and putting them in jail for that. That's nuts. That's crazy.
Are you defending a lot of these guys?
I defend a lot of them all the time, and I see them. They've been attacking drugs in the same way for 25 years, and hasn't changed a thing. It's destroyed lives, destroyed careers. You know, I mean, Victor, I don't know, if you were 17 and you were arrested in your, you know, where you were growing up, and they offered you a felony or jail, what would you do? You'd have a felony conviction at 17 before you went to college.
For possession of marijuana.
For any felony, it doesn't matter. The point is you have a felony, now you have to disclose that to the United States school you went to and any jobs. All right, or else they find it out. I mean, how does that start you off at 17?
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Now you're going to go downhill from there. What are you going to do to make money? You know?
So,
right,
but some
for
of that,
TV?
Some of that's federal. Some of that's federal. Those are federal laws.
Federal and state. State laws are very, you know.
Why don't you tell all of us an example of a case you've represented where a minority was, in your opinion, mistreated by the laws, particularly a drug law? Do you have one in mind?
I have an amalgam which pretty much covers everything. I have the drug addict or reformed drug addict who stays home, takes care of the kids, may have had a difficult childhood, may not, may have had a good childhood, gets into drugs, drinks a little, smokes a little, you know, and gets a call from a relative who wants them to say, you want to make some money? I said, no, I don't want to make some money. Okay, well, call them four times. You want to get back involved in this? You can make some money, some $500. You can make five. All right, I could use the $500. The $500 is actually a confidential informant working for the DEA who's setting him up to enter into a conspiracy, holds him responsible for all the drugs in the conspiracy. If he doesn't cooperate, it's a 10-year mandatory minimum for certain amounts, which you do eighty-five percent of that time. You end up, you do 8.5 years.
If you were to cooperate.
Mandatory minimum. Well, no, if you don't. I mean, if they don't think you cooperate, sometimes they don't, you know, they're not. The point is, if you don't have background, if it wasn't violent, there's certain things to get into that certain range, but you end up with marginalized individuals, some with drug problems, some with mental health issues, who did not set out to do these things or had a mental episode or something. We've had those
people
before.
Make mistakes,
especially young people. Their brains aren't developed.
That's true, biologically.
So until about, but anyways, people make mistakes.
No, but they're early mid 20s.
Sometimes you have a minor drug dealer who's been selling drugs on the street for four or five, you know, arrests, felony background, and now he gets involved in a conspiracy. They indict the conspiracy with all his other drug cohorts, and now they hold him responsible for the full amount of the conspiracy drugs, which is 40 kilos or whatever they've sold over the 8 months they're in operation.
He's charged in an unfair way for a small part.
Well, the government doesn't think it's unfair. I mean, they think that's...
See, now some people would say that, I'll take me, for example. I mean, this isn't a great example, but I would, if someone offered me to sell drugs, I'd say no.
Right. But you absolutely, yeah, I mean, you had the radio show.
You know when I was a kid, I'm saying I didn't.
No, you know, he'd had opportunities as a kid. I mean, you weren't on the street hungry and running around looking to get high. You know, I mean, you come from a different, and a lot of people would, but a lot of people wouldn't. And the way we're dealing with this, the way we're dealing with it in our prosecution and punishment and retribution.
What's the most unfair prosecution you've ever seen with a client? I mean, is there a prototype of a model of this is exactly what's wrong?
I mean, there's specifics that I'd love to discuss with you, but not on the radio. The most unfair, what you have is a, I don't know if other people understand this, you have a system out where you have due process. And due process is not good process. And they will bend and move things in order to make sure the guy's convicted. So you don't have a very clean shot at going forward against the government because all you get is due process. Does that make sense?
You're saying due process is not very fair.
No, I'm not saying it's not fair. It's due. I mean, everyone gets it, but it's a process, and that's fair that everyone gets it and they get an appeal.
But the process itself isn't fair.
It's like making sausage. I mean, you don't want to watch that shit, you know? Mm-hmm. It's that. It's not like TV.
Have you,
I'll tell you that.
Right.
You know, it's constantly, it's very frustrating.
Is there a case that's broken your heart?
Yeah.
Give me an example of something with that.
Yeah. I got 18-year-old kids. I go to trial on, I'll get involved in a conspiracy because they've got no place, you know, stay. And and they end up.
Well, let's just stop right there. What does that mean? You got into a conspiracy.
He was running errands for people in his neighborhood, and he got involved in a drug conspiracy.
And was
sentenced. And even though you couldn't charge conspiracy at the time, they arrested him on his 18th birthday because it was before he was the time he didn't. So, anyways, they ended up sentencing him for the conspiracy drugs, and he did under the sentencing guidelines. He did 20 years, 18 and a half, 19 years.
Under the sentencing guidelines.
They're no longer mandatory, but they're still in effect.
And when you say running, like what was his true involvement in that crime?
He would pick up champagne for them. He would drop off portions of unsold drugs at the end of the day. They were all tapes. The evidence against him was tapes. So he's taking direction from the leader. And the one thing that broke my heart was they said, go get some Dom Perignon because they drank Dom. And he goes, oh, for me? And he goes, no, for me. You know, I mean, the kid thought it was, they were giving him champagne. The kids, you know, he would run cars for him. He would change titles and things like that. But yeah, that broke my heart.
What is it that broke your heart about? I mean, like I'm hearing
20,
it going.
20 years, 20 years.
He sounds like he was committing a lot of crimes.
He was 17 and he had no place to live. He didn't have clothes. He wasn't raised. What's the punishment for something like that?
Right, and what I mean.
What would you punish him to?
I don't think 17. I think that's
20. He did 20. He served 18 and a half.
Have you talked to him since he got out?
Yeah.
Is he a friend of yours?
Well, he's a client. Yeah, people come back. People come back 20 years later.
He's still having issues with the law?
I can't talk about that.
Would it be fair to say that sometimes people go in as very, at the most, sometimes not real criminals in your estimation, but they come out hardened criminals? The system itself makes them into criminals?
I would say this. I would say 20 years in jail is helping no one for nothing.
Did you knew him when he went in?
Well, yeah, I represented him.
17 some years ago 20, or whatever. Did you visit him ever during that period?
No, I didn't. Well, I do an appeal. And I'm done. My appointment's over.
It's is it hard to stay emotionally separate from, because it can be really. I see you're moved here right now.
It's part of work. I just separate yourself from it. You know, it's like a doctor. You go when you're operating. You do the best you can, and some people don't live. You know, they don't make it. So,
well, it's really hard.
It's hard because you're playing poker with people's lives.
You're playing what?
Poker with people's lives, you know.
Well,
I'll give you this, give me that, you know.
What I'm hearing is, and seeing, and, you know, the cameras, I don't know how much they can pick up, but you seem really full of emotion around this. And I get it because, see, you actually know these people. Like, you have to sit and talk to his mother or the aunt or the grandmother, whoever is in that family.
I meet them in a professional, you know, perspective, and I deal with them on a you know, with a level of, I try to do my best, and I try to, you know, remain separated from them. I don't want to become involved in their lives, even though, you know, I have different families I become involved in lives.
Do you think that the laws were meant to be racist or to single out African American males? What do you think?
I don't think that at all.
Because it kind of seems that way.
Well, the effect of it is, and once the once you see a general effect of what's happening specifically and you accept it, I mean, you're saying, well, we're prosecuting much more African Americans, we're giving them much more time, and we're giving them higher sentences because of the correct, you know, ratios that they had. And they'll say, wow, yeah, we're not going to do anything about that. We can't do anything about it. Now, when you start getting to the point of prisons are costing a lot of money, well, this is a big issue now. But the fact that we're prosecuting, even in Chicago, we're prosecuting marijuana cases. We arrest, we charge, we convict, and we incarcerate more African Americans per rata than anyone else in the city. Those are the guys that the cops are chasing down, searching. Those are the guys that end up with felony convictions, separated from their families, lose their jobs.
When you say chasing down, are you saying that because...
No, literally chasing down in cars. They chase them down. They do a U-turn. They chase them down. They pull them over, pat them over. Sometimes, you know, the kids...
For doing nothing? Well, walking down a street?
I always have a basis for the, you know, no
seatbelt. Is that a wink, wink basis?
That's how they do it.
So are you suggesting?
That's just how they do it. I mean, I'm not suggesting. I'm just, no, it's not. That's their, to them, that's how they operate. That's their job. Their job is to get, to stop bad guys, get convictions, take guns off the street. They see it very black and white. Those guys had guns. Those guys had drugs. I have to go get them.
You remember Mayor Byrne?
Yes.
Jane Byrne.
Yes. I don't think I was in town for her, but yes.
She moved into Cabrini-Green.
Yes.
And
fabulous publicity.
Yes.
I was very impressed.
And she stayed there a little over 20 days. And Cabrini-Green, for those of you who don't know, they've kind of turned into a very hip area now, but it was a very dangerous part of town with public housing.
There were a bunch of communists living there too.
Communists?
Yeah. Like 7 or 8 communists. Yeah.
White Where? Guys. In Cabrini-Green then, you're saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
no one could believe it.
Well, what I'm wondering is, what about Rahm Emanuel and his family moving into some of these neighborhoods with the high crime rate?
I don't know, Vic. Do you think that's going to happen?
But wouldn't it be an interesting...
No, that'd never happen.
No, but it would be interesting. Talking about your idea of the patrolling the streets and in these neighborhoods, I think what would be a great idea is for the city to buy a home on each one of these blocks and have a police officer living there.
You don't want, I mean, that there's a lot of problems with that, but that you know, the idea of being out in force and being available to the community, I think is the first, one of the first bases you can get.
Well, I want to, you kind of, in my mind, intimated that the police are doing what they need to do to, it's kind of like a sales job. You got to make, as far as their quotas. And you didn't use the word quota.
I didn't use the word quota. But I mean, the police are paid to, as Mayor Daley say, preserve disorder. They're out there chasing bad guys, or killing them.
Well, I want to talk.
That's what they do. They go after people they perceive as criminals. They go after them, and if they try to run or try to injure an officer, they kill them.
Let's talk about one of the most high-profile cases of the year, 2015. Got 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. We have seen in videotape.
Was this the kid with the knife who cop came up?
Exactly.
Shot? Yeah.
So for over a year, the city of Chicago tried to suppress footage.
Well, you don't know that. I know. It's what it seems like to you, but you don't know that. I mean, you don't know what was going on. They could have planned to release it a couple of days before Thanksgiving on a Wednesday when it was cold. I mean, you don't know if they tried to suppress it. It's something that would eventually come out.
Why is it that
why did it come out on the same day as the state's attorney indicted the guy on a Wednesday evening before a holiday in December, November when it's cold? Well, I don't know. It might be a coincidence.
Well, what about, I'm really interested. This surprises me that you don't think that it's odd that it took a Freedom of Information request in over a year, I think it was 13 or 14 months, to get this footage out.
It's not something they're going to, first of all, it's a crime scene. Second of all, the state's attorney is hesitant to release information that's involved in an investigation. You can't get information from an investigation. So as long as they say it's an ongoing investigation, I mean, it's an ongoing investigation. The guy was shot, he's dead.
But don't you think that's a long time to be holding onto that video? And don't you think that
No time's too short, no time's too long. It's never a good time to release something like that.
Well, in this case, you had the mayor running for election. I think it was 2 or 3 months.
There's people that say, well, look at the coincidences. It had to be a conspiracy. But, I mean,
Well, let me just...
I agree with you that if that actually happened, he's doing a good job of keeping himself elected. But, I mean, we haven't seen that.
Would you be surprised?
Yeah, again, he's very good. He's a very good politician.
Do you think he's an honest guy?
Honest is a difficult term. I mean, do you think...
Are you a politician?
No, I'm not. No, but I mean, what's honest? What are you being honest with me?
I'm trying to be.
I
believe I'm being honest. I'm trying to get answers to things that
I'm
curious
about. No,
I know,
but honest is... was he being honest? Well, I mean... the politician can only be so honest.
Is your mayor?
He's not going to talk about his bathroom etiquette. He's not going to talk about his, you know, things with his wife. There's honesty, and you got to run a city. You have a lot of responsibility. It's easy to criticize people who have a lot of responsibility because they fuck up all the time, you know. But I mean, it's going to fuck up if they're there or not. So I don't know if Vic, I don't know if he released it in that time. It's a possibility, but I mean, that's other people would say that's a good way to handle the release in the media and stop riots from happening in the city.
You've seen the, because, if it never got out, there wouldn't be riots.
No, but I mean to release it, they don't know. They were afraid that riots were going to happen on this one. You know, they were afraid they're afraid of riots. They're afraid of people getting up in arms because they're people aren't happy about
that. It just seems that Chicago is so corrupt in so many ways. Like, this family got $5 million. That's a settlement that they got from the city of Chicago for this 17-year-old's murder or death.
And if he was run over by a streetcar, they'd give, you know, there'd be a suit and everything.
Well, but there's a second
corruption.
Part of
what you're asserting is corruption is, it's a, you know, you have a lot of people from a lot of parts of the world, and it's a big, messy city. There's a lot of garbage, and there's a lot of...
What do you mean by
corruption?
Garbage?
Well, when you have a bureaucracy, and you have a huge bureaucracy with the Chicago Public Schools, with the police department, with everything, these bureaucracies are not going to be run as without people trying to grab. It's a city. People grab in America. They're grabbers.
Well, my point about the $5 million, I have no issue with however much money they want to give the family. What I was shocked is about was I read that the attorneys got 40%, which I hear is usually you get 33 1/3. And it just feels like if that's not a, I've never heard 40% for this kind of case. And people
for different things, they're different amounts. If you have a different contract in the
it just seems like they took advantage of the family.
Well, then you're going to say the same thing about the tax people who take their half. Are they taking advantage of the family by taking half in taxes?
No, because everyone pays the same.
They worked for free until they got the money too. So if they got nothing, these attorneys would have gotten nothing. So they obviously went to the right people.
Do you agree that 40% is not standard?
No, I don't agree. In some circumstances. No,
that's how it's being reported.
Well, here's what you have. You have different agreements. And I don't know what the attorneys took. You know, you're telling me this. I know in some cases it's 33 1/3. And then if you go to trial, it pumps up to 40. Sometimes it's 25% and 10% over every million or things like that.
Okay.
But there's different agreements. And
so maybe they're being hard, piling on to the...
No, what I'm saying is anything that they took as fees, the family agreed upon and the state sanctioned it. It was fully sanctioned by the state. They're not going to take money that isn't sanctioned by the state.
Have you seen the video of Laquan getting shot?
I have.
And what were your thoughts when you saw it?
They killed the fucking guy. I say that?
Yeah, well, you just did.
They killed him.
Yeah.
I mean, but you can look on YouTube and find all kinds of instances of them killing people.
Of who killing people?
The police. I'll give you an example. They found a bunch of car stereo guys robbing thieves robbing a car stereo shop late at night, and they surrounded the building, said, come out here with your hands up. And the thieves got back, and these guys were all on probation. They're on, you know, out on bond for stuff. They got back in the van. They drove through the garage door to try to get away. And they almost hit, as they were coming out, they almost hit one of the cops. Well, what did the cops do? They didn't say, stop, you're under arrest. They shot into the van until everyone's dead, reloading and shooting more. And they killed them. So that's another video. The police are killing people in Chicago a lot, all the time. It's become, you know, they don't tolerate running. A lot of places shoot people after car chases. Their adrenaline gets up. We're using a different class of officers now. I think there's less training, less education. I don't know. So a lot of them are military. So those are good. Those guys are.
But what did you think when you saw the guy getting shot 16 times? Do you didn't think that was excessive?
I thought he didn't need to shoot him is what I thought. But when police are trained to shoot someone, they don't shoot them once. They shoot them until they're done, until the person stopped moving. That's protocol with shooting people. You don't shoot people to wound them or knock a gun out of his hand like Mannix. Right. Once you engage deadly force, you unleash deadly force.
Well,
you're trained to shoot repeatedly in the chest until the person stops. I mean, that's just it's a horrible thing to see. But I'll tell you, Vic. If you watch an execution, if this country watched executions on TV, that's a horrible thing to see too. And there'd be no executions because it's obscene.
You've attended some?
No, I've not attended it. But, I mean, they don't show executions in this country. When the history of executions used to be, you know, public spectacle.
Come and see.
Yeah, come and see what this guy did. So, you know, you all know not to do it, horse thief, you know. Yeah, that was the basis of, you know, now people say they're in favor of, but they've never seen it.
Right. Well,
sorry to get you off.
No. But okay. Getting off to this Laquan, you know, the police chief was fired.
You got to fire someone at that point.
Officer Jason, this Van Dyke charged with first degree murder. Does that surprise you?
Well, they all had to do something, didn't they? They had to do something with that video. So, I mean, a lot of cops are charged with things criminally and end up going to trial, and there is mistrials or there are acquittals in bench trials. That's kind of the way it works.
Well, would you be surprised if he were to get off?
No. I mean, we just had a couple officers get off recently. Not get off. They were found either not guilty by the judge,
right,
or, you know, for different things, not murder or anything, but different charges, criminal charges.
Have you defended? You don't defend officers, correct?
I've defended officers in federal.
You have?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you really can work both sides, depending on who your client is. You're either defending the law enforcement or you're defending someone who...
Well, no, I'm defending the person charged with the crime, so that's the same side. That's the defendant.
Right, but you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, do you have an allegiance? So you have to be... Don't you kind of have to be careful with your answers here because...
No. I mean, if a surgeon comes in and somebody is shot, you know, you're going to fix him, whether he's an upstanding citizen or a bad guy. You're just going to do your job for him. And that's, you know...
I mean, have you ever represented anyone who had planted evidence or was... where you believed and was found...
You mean where the other side has dummied up evidence and...
Yeah, like police misconduct.
Like perjury? Like that, where they will testify falsely?
Have you had that?
Sure.
And...
sure. Three material false statements on the record in front of a judge.
And you know they perjured themselves?
Sure, they testified both ways. They testified one way and then they testified the other way, so one of the ways was perjury.
And did they end up seeing any time for that?
No, they were congratulated for their... The judge said that their testimony was very credible. And my client ended up taking a plea and going to jail for 10 years.
10 years. And...
Oh, federal court, by the way.
Federal court?
That was in federal court. So when you say we're putting in federal oversight in the state in Chicago, that's going to be a big thing. But, you know, federal...
Right, the U.S.
Chicago officers, Chicago police officers are sometimes work as contract agents.
Meaning they're...
For the DEA. Yeah, they're testifying, they're automatically, we're making you an agent for the DEA to go do stuff, but... There's a very active prosecution in the Midwest for drugs.
Well, you kind of referred to it. I hadn't really mentioned it yet about the U.S. Justice Department announcing a civil rights investigation.
In?
Chicago.
Right, but it's the Justice Department. I mean, the Justice Department are...
They're kind of investigating themselves?
No, they're investigating Chicago. The Justice Department is... They're cops, too. They're prosecutors and they're cops. I mean, that's what they do. They work with the Chicago police.
Should Rahm Emanuel resign? Because that's becoming a little...
He'll never resign. No, that's...
Well, whether he will or not is really not the question as far as, do you think he should? What do you think?
No, he'll serve out his term. And if the people aren't unhappy, because things aren't going bad at work, you quit. You want to get in there.
Don't you think it's a little worse than just things not going well at work? I mean, this guy, Laquan, had 16 bullets pumped into him and... It doesn't look like the mayor's obviously, he's fired someone. A guy's being charged with first degree.
Killed for lots of reasons every day in Chicago and all over the world. I mean, all over the country for sure. There's LA. People get killed today in horrible car accidents from industrial misfeasance for cars that are unsafely made.
You're presenting it almost like it's business as usual.
No, it's statistics. I mean, yeah, there were 16 shots and they killed this kid, but... A lot of kids get killed by the police, and there's really no, I don't know, consequences. They don't prosecute them. They don't have... You don't have a claim for civil rights. They haven't really allowed civil rights to go forward, civil rights cases. So consequently, lawyers won't take them.
So you, when you say civil rights cases, you mean where someone is going to claim that their civil rights were violated by the police?
Yeah, they're suing them for shooting them 16 times. You know, those kind of cases. I mean, this is a case where they, you know, you say, oh, they took 40% of their money. A lot of people don't get any money. They don't get any cases, you know, when they dummied up evidence against them. It comes down, they say, yeah, we're sorry. There's no money to, you know, the judges, we can't touch the judges because the judges.
Tell me what's wrong with my thinking. Okay, now, I live in Los Angeles. I come to Chicago to visit. I really like the deep dish pizza. I might go to...
No, you don't.
I really do. Yeah. And I like visiting you. I've done that. You and Connie. You're lovely.
It's always good to see you.
Yeah. And I have a great time and I see my family and it's just really fun. But...
Are you nervous about being there, about being shot?
In your neighborhood, I didn't feel that safe, but not really. No, actually, it was pretty nice. Wicker Park was nice. Yeah. But my point is, it's like infuriating to me when I just...
It's all peaceful everywhere you go. You never hear shots. You never hear anything.
Right, but there's no sense of guilt about that? That you live within miles of this terror?
I mean,
terror?
You feel guilt that the United States drones are dropping bombs on people all over the Far East and the Middle East? I mean, do you feel guilt about that every day? Do you feel guilt about that your Prius is polluting and your iPhone is using electricity and... You're using water.
Are they really the same?
No, but I mean, you know, it's, I mean, why am I going to feel guilt for a problem that's really all over in cities? And I really, there's nothing I could do because I've tried.
I've argued.
Oh, I mean, I make arguments. I say, this is crazy. You know, we've been doing this drug thing for 25 years. Nothing's happened.
Have you done anything outside of representing people who are charged?
I'm pretty busy.
Well, I'm just saying.
You mean, am I, you know, going on radio shows and telling people what happens?
Are you a social activist?
No, I'm tired. I'm tired at the end of the day.
But when that
I got to represent people.
But doesn't someone need to step up in that way?
That's why we're electing you to do that. That's why we're thinking this is the guy to do it who's got time on his hands.
You're right.
He's got a show.
Well,
and he's got a forum for it so he can go out and.
Well, if I.
You can, you know. Crusade for, you can start in, you know, you could clean up the dog shit in LA. You could start with that.
I think, like I said, if this stuff were happening in the nicer parts of Chicago, there'd be a quicker response. There'd be a lot more people working on solutions because, you know, once
voters,
those nice-
you mean where the voters, yeah, I agree with you. And because there's value to the property there. You know, a shooting would devalue property
in certain areas, and they'd come in.
Yeah, and when they have wilding things on Michigan Avenue, when the tourists are there, they just go nuts. But I mean, there's really not the impetus. I mean, you know, it's.
It's just upsetting.
They have they spend a lot of money on new trucks, so all the vehicles are pretty new. So they're starting.
Right. Well, I think
I agree. I agree. It's a real problem, and I wish I had time to. If I knew what to do, I've been sitting in these meetings where people talk about why they're shooting each other, and I just assume it was drug territory, but it's not, you know? And now I don't know what the fuck to think. I don't know, why are you shooting each other then? It just doesn't make sense to me.
And you're saying?
And hitting innocent people. I mean, these people who are shooting each other for fun, get them on the third try, but the first two, they kill innocent people. You know, people, it's exasperating.
Well,
what do you do?
You told me that the reason they do it sometimes is just for fun, and the other times it's just they don't like the person.
That's what they've explained it to me, and I can't see any other reason.
You've had a guy murder someone, and you'll say, what happened, or did you do it? And he'll say, I did it,
I didn't do it. No, but I've been in interviews where people discuss.
What do you mean by interviews?
I have witnesses. You know, I'm involved in the area of crime, so I'm around it a lot. So I hear people being debriefed.
Recordings, like when they're being interrogated, before
someone testifies, they want to know if what they're saying is correct. They have a obligation to do that, so they go through the testimony previously.
See, I would think that Rahm Emanuel should quit because under his watch,
who's he going to get, and who's going to go in to take his place? Number one, what difference would it make if he doesn't serve out his term?
Who's going to put in a different?
We've had police. That's why we have blue lights in Chicago. We had police scandals for years and years.
What do you mean? That's why you've had blue lights.
They brought in some guy, a specialist, and he said we need blue lights in the cop cars. So they said, okay, we'll put blue lights in. So we're the only place in the country, I think, that has blue lights because of a police scandal.
But, is the city just naturally corrupt? more so than other places? Is that is
no,
it just in the blood
of the
city?
There's a lot of corruption all over in different levels. I mean, the outlying areas have quite a bit of corruption. And rural places, the corruption's not there because the money's not there. I mean, if you're going downstate Illinois, you said look for corruption, you know. There's just not the kind of money that's involved. We got federal money coming here. We got state money. We have, there's just money for, you know, very big bureaucracies, school board, police department.
Is the most unfair sentence that you've seen was that 17? Oh. What's the most unfair sentence you've experienced?
There
was
a judge in Chicago who, I think it was a Republican appointed judge who gives out 100, 120 year sentences. Recently.
For what?
Drug cases.
Minor?
No, they're big drug cases, but, you know, 120 years, you know, it's kind of crazy.
This guy who was a 17 or 18 year old, the one who went away for almost 20 years, 18 some years, for being a runner, the Don Perignon guy.
Yeah.
You felt that that was an excessive sentence for his minor involvement, and I'm just curious.
For his major involvement, I think it was a ridiculous sentence for a kid.
So, because he was 17. He was 17, right?
If you take all the kids who do this kind of shit because they have no supervision, you might as well just lock up the city. I mean,
So you wouldn't sentence him to anything?
No, it's not that.
I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't sentence people, and I would find it very hard to find out what a fair sentence would be for anyone.
Do you think he should have been put in jail at all?
Well, or prison? My point. Let's look at this. Look at it from this point of view. As a result of him going to prison, did it stop drugs from being sold in his area? One, did it stop any drugs from being sold? Two, did it help him at all with his future? Three, did it help everyone around him with their fortune? Number five, what did it cost? So you're paying a lot of money for something that doesn't do anything at all and fucks up the kid and his family. And you keep doing that. So, Vic, do you think it's a good idea? Because that's your money. I mean, that's your tax money. That's what they're doing with it. They're dropping, you know, they're funding, you know, dropping bombs and they're they're incarcerating people.
Don't you think it's a little odd that Barack Obama, our president, at this moment of this broadcast, who identifies as African American, is from the city of Chicago. Why under his?
Well, he's identified as African American. Nobody identifies as like just a little bit.
I mean, he's African. Why has this not been a big part of his thing? I mean. I don't get that.
I don't know if you've ever run a country.
No.
Or a city. But there's a lot of stuff going on all the time that you're involved with.
Wouldn't this
and
be a, pot,
the fact
a big
that
one?
The, you know what? They're all big. And what would you do to stop people from shooting each other in Chicago?
Well, you
hose down the streets?
You just gave some solutions.
Well, the other thing is if you put like checkpoints at every block and search people, now you've got constitutional violations.
So, but that's the way you're. But the problem I have with that answer is you make it seem as if there's zero solution. Yet you have provided answers.
I haven't seen a solution to the devastating poverty, and like Switzerland, everyone has an automatic weapon there. There's no shootings like this because everyone's rich. Upper middle class is what we should call them. Here, same situation. If we make everyone rich or upper middle class, I mean, it'll be like Kenilworth. It'll just
Kenilworth
be
is a nice, very fancy neighborhood on Lake Michigan, if you have never been there.
But West Garfield Park is closer in than Kenilworth, so it'd be a better property. So if we plow it under and start again, sell it as condos. But yeah, I mean, you have...
I'm not really making an argument. I haven't at all even made an argument about guns being an issue. And that's a whole... To me, that's a very big discussion that would be almost... You know, it'd be too big for this hour. But... I don't think that's really the issue. You know, I think it's about the things that you were talking about, the social issues. So you're listening there, wherever you're listening, and you're thinking maybe of coming to Chicago. If you have never been to Chicago, maybe you've read the headlines and they are pretty scary. The media loves to jump on a big story. I mean, obviously they do because they want to get ratings, and it's, you know, there's a legitimacy to the story too. I mean, violent crime where people feel unsafe is worth hearing about.
A lot of people aren't going to the scenic sites of, like, you know, I don't know, bad neighborhoods in New York. I mean, people go to New York, but there's surrounding areas which are very, you know, Compton isn't, I mean, there's areas around LA that are bad neighborhoods, but tourists don't go there.
Tell the people, tell you guys listening who might be coming to Chicago, I mean, who might even feel afraid, you're saying to them, Jeff, that...
Watch where you go, know where you're going, and you're fine. I mean, it's a lovely, safe, beautiful city with a lot of friendly people.
And you have no embarrassment about the high, the murder rate among, and that's part of the
city? I'm embarrassed about my city for a lot of things. I mean, I would, if I...
I mean, I think it's shameful.
Well...
And I think it's...
I don't know what to do, Vic. I don't know what to do to stop it. I don't know what I can do. And obviously the mayor and the president don't know what they can do because they have a lot of ability and a lot of money behind trying to do it.
Well, I think...
And they haven't seen... I mean, it would be... You understand that how much money they're losing in tourism.
Well...
Billions of dollars in tax money.
I'm more concerned about the lives, but I get what you're saying. And I'm not saying you're less concerned about the lives. I get what you're saying.
That would stop. I mean, you do both things. I'm not saying you stop killing people because, but people have been killing people in Chicago for.
But you know, you by profession are in the trenches and you're doing something about it because you're trying to help these people.
I'm arguing in the face of a hurricane. I argue that these laws are crazy, that we're not going anywhere. I argue that the government shouldn't set up people like these stash house cases. You know, they shouldn't.
Where they
go find crime and charge it.
You mean they create a crime?
Yeah, they're creating crimes. Yeah, yeah.
The police create a fake crime almost.
The DEA are doing it with narco-terrorism in Africa now, I believe. I mean, it's...
So they create, they have people pretending to be bad guys who are really cops, and then they try and get people in the neighborhood involved, and then they bust the people in the neighborhood?
A lot of the crime that I defend in federal court is created crime where they have a cooperating informant who's a bad criminal go out and try to find people to commit more crime so they can put it on their books as... We're solving stuff. We'll keep the bureaucracy going.
Is that, you feel that's entrapment?
Well, it doesn't matter
it's
how
not
I
honest
feel.
Crime.
The courts certainly don't feel, nor does the government. Yeah, everyone's fine with it. You know, I mean, you go entrapment is a defense you have to take to a jury saying, "Yes, we did everything," but so it's a bad way to start a defense. But
so, what do you think the future is going to hold?
More of the same, because. Bottom line, if you're a politician who's not tough on crime, if you're soft on crime, you won't be elected. So what we're doing as a populace, we're feeding this by keeping the tough on crime kids in and not really objectively looking at what's going on.
And what's really frustrating
is... Like sports. Do you follow sports?
Yeah.
Okay. Sports isn't really news. Don't you feel guilty not really following actual news?
I follow news hardcore.
Okay.
So I don't.
Okay, but sports, I mean, the time you spend following sports, you could solve some of these issues, you know.
Well, I think...
I don't want to... I'm not beating you up for following sports. I'm just saying it's not
I'm not
news.
A big sports nut, so too,
okay.
I don't feel beaten up.
All right.
I'm from Chicago.
I understand. It's brutal over there for sports. So,
exactly. Well, we're almost out of time here, and it's been amazingly interesting. I mean, I really... No one has a perspective of what's going on like you do.
Well... You know, I appreciate
it's
you saying that.
But. Well, it's truth. We read stuff. Reading is different. You're in it. What I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that perhaps people in Chicago are in a fishbowl. And when you're in a fishbowl, you get complacent a little bit to that little world of yours. And I have the benefit of living outside that fishbowl in Los Angeles. And from Los Angeles, it looks like it's insanity over there. But you being in the fishbowl, while you know it's insane, you're kind of getting, and I'm not putting you down for this, I think it's natural, we get used to the water.
Well, that's how it is. I mean, that's when you they're shooting, yeah, they shoot people. I mean, it's you get used, I mean, it's
you're
frustrating.
You're about to get used
it's,
to it.
It's stressful.
But you
it's
do.
It's frustrating for me.
I suppose.
Because my side of it would be defending people who are charged against, you know, have these people as witnesses, and then going to go forward doing a civil rights case, trying to find, we had a false imprisonment case where we tried to go forward to help this guy, you know, was imprisoned by these cops. And it's like beating your head against the wall. You do everything you can, you know, you do everything you can, and it doesn't seem to make a difference, Vic. It really doesn't. And to watch the policy going forward.
Well, I think you are
forward,
helping some people. I think you're being a little bit over the top with saying it doesn't make any difference. I think that's inaccurate because I am certain that you have helped some people get out of jail or not go to jail, people who are innocent or being mistreated. Isn't that the truth?
I do the best I can for my clients. I try to sleep at night. I'd really try to do the best I can for my clients.
And I got to say, you are a great guy. I mean,
thank you, Victor.
Yeah.
You're a pretty good guy yourself.
No, it's really true. I mean, you have such a heart. And, you know, there are so many types of law that one can practice. And being a defense attorney, you do a lot of court assigned work, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a panel attorney for the federal defender. I'm a private attorney, but I get assignments. I get appointed in federal criminal cases.
So, you know, you're working at an hourly rate that is nowhere near your top value. I mean,
that would be true.
Yeah. And, you know, that's an incredible service.
I get a lot of experience. I enjoy the work.
Yeah, but you're not 25 and you're doing it just for experience. You're a guy who obviously has a passion for this and there's something deeper. It's not about just the experience.
I do enjoy the work. I do enjoy going up against them.
Yeah. And, you know, it does, I think that part of the solution is to have more people like yourself who are actually doing the work. And so when you say that, you know, and I was saying, why don't you get more publicly involved as far as, you know, in some kind of activism, you know, you spend all day, you know, in a sense, this is a form of activism, actually.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to
say. It's true, yeah. And I'm so grateful that you came here and had a chance to visit with me while you're in Los Angeles. You have a lot of things you could be doing here. And,
well, I really appreciate the time. I really enjoy talking with you. And the swag is over in the other room, right?
Thank you. That's right. It's going to get crazy perfect. Here in a little bit. So, Jeff, are you a social guy? Like if people wanted to just contact you, they really were maybe moved by you. They wanted to, maybe they actually needed some help with something. Is there a way to contact you? Do you have an email address or are you
I
on
do.
Facebook or
I'm
is
not.
That a comfortable thing
I'm
for
not.
You?
No, I
so we'll just leave it at this?
Yeah, I just do okay, my practice through that.
You can always contact me. You know what? I don't even know if they're allowed to advertise. It sounds like I'm suddenly turning this into an ad. But anyways, I always have an ability to get a hold of Jeff if you have a question you'd like me to forward to him. And
or you're looking for an attorney.
Or if you're looking for an attorney, yeah. You can see the guy's got a great heart and he's got years of experience. And he's a good guy.
Thanks, Vic.
Yeah, you need a good guy in your corner. I want to thank you guys so much for listening and watching. If you're watching on our video feed, and it's just so great to have you. And I hope to see you again very soon. And if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe to Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question.